Blog Talk Radio.
Further their personal political views rather than the best interests of investors. More than 700,000 individuals and organizations have written the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission to require this needed disclosure. However, the SEC recently declined to put disclosure of corporate political spending on its regulatory agenda for 2014. Until the SEC decides to act on this issue, investors will continue to be in the dark about whether their companies contribute to groups like ALEC, and that's the American Legislative Exchange Council. It's a right-wing group.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the really interesting things that came out today is Vermont approves single-payer health care. Everybody is in and nobody is out.
Really?
Yeah. The affordable health care continues to plow ahead despite Republican attempts to fight it in every turn. What is unfolding in front of us is nothing short of spectacular. The problems with healthcare.gov are slowly being resolved, which is helping more and more people sign up for affordable health care, many for the first time in their life. The law provides so much more than that, including standards for even the lowest level plans, protection for young adults 26 and younger, elimination of pre-existing plans.
Does it say how much it's going to cost, I wonder?
No. Of course, you will not hear the success story in the news because those stories are not nearly as sexy as the Obama Live slogan that you so found. Now, this is a pro-Obama thing, I guess, but it's just funny. The biggest downside of the Affordable Health Care Act is the reliance on the private insurance industry. It does not have to be this way. However, there is another provision in the Affordable Health Care Act that can open the doors for states to institute their own single-payer health care system. Other states have a public option, especially for those below a certain income level, but no state has instituted a true single-payer system. All of this has changed thanks to President Obama and the Affordable Health Care Act. Yeah, give yourself a hand there, Mr. Obama boy. Okay, but Vermont, home of Ben and Jerry's maple syrup, Bernie Sanders, and the first state to pass marriage equality, now Vermont will be known for something that will impact every resident in the state. The Affordable Health Care Act provided states with federal funds to institute a Medicaid expansion. The states chose to expand the program also were able to set up their own state exchanges, which were relatively free from the problems the federal site had. Well, Vermont decided to take it a step further by setting up their very own single-payer system. I don't know if that has to do with anything with Obamacare, but...
Well, because it comes under that, I guess.
Yeah. So...
I wish Connecticut would do that. That would be great.
Makes sense, huh? The program will be fully operational by 2017. Yeah, if you live that long, folks. That's, what, 4 years from now? And will be funded through Medicare, Medicaid, federal money for the ACA given to Vermont, and a slight increase in taxes in exchange. There will be no more premiums, deductibles, copays, hospital bills, or anything else aimed at making insurance companies a profit. Further, all hospitals and healthcare providers will now be nonprofit. Oh, man. Yeah, this is a dream world, Vermont Dean world here. This system will provide an instant boost to the state economy. On the one side, you have workers that no longer have to worry about paying medical costs on a monthly premium and are able to use that monthly for other things, that money for other things. And on the other side, you have the burden of paying insurance taken off of the employer's side, who will be able to use the saved money to provide a better wage and or reinvest in their company through updated infrastructure. So in other words, this is just another way to keep wages down. To make sure that it is done right the first time, Vermont brought in a specialist who knows a thing or two about setting up single-payer systems. Dr. William Hsiao, the Harvard healthcare economist, who helped craft health systems in seven countries, was Vermont's advisor. He estimates that Vermont will save 25% per capita over the current system in the administrative costs and other savings. Many like to say that the United States has the best healthcare system in the world. The problem is we don't, not even close. In fact, the only way you can get the best healthcare in the world is if you're willing to and able to pay for it. The United States better for its people. Costs have to be held down. There is no reason why the U.S. has to pay twice the amount per capita as the next costly system in the world, Norway's, and still not cover millions of its citizens. A Harvard Medical School study states that 45,000 Americans die each year from treatable diseases because they cannot afford to get treatment. 45,000 Americans die every year because they cannot afford treatment. Are you ready for that? That is 15 times the amount of people that died during the September 11 attack, or perhaps for you righties out there, you would rather see it put this way, 11,250 times the amount of people that died in the Benghazi attack. That equals 5 Americans that die every hour of every day of every year because of a preventable illness that was not taken care of due to lack of access and means. Oh, yeah. Well, Obama is going to make sure of that, Mr. Lefty, Righty, and in between. Well, even once the Affordable Care Act wrinkles that iron out, which they will be, and every America is covered, okay? Which will,
every American?
Yeah, it says of every America.
Well, they must mean every American.
Which will happen. That will not change the fact that all of this is being driven by a for-profit system by companies that only care about their bottom line. Despite rules in the Affordable Care Act, which prevent insurance companies from absolutely gouging their customers, insurance companies are not exactly known for their ethical behavior. A single-payer system would all but eliminate anybody dying unnecessarily due to active access to health care. Our Declaration of Independence states we hold these truths to be self-evident and all men are created equal, and they are endowed with their creator and certain unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. How can anybody have life and happiness without their health? Despite the glaring hypocrisy of rich white males who owned slaves stating all men are created equal, we have come a long way from 1776. Yet, when it comes to the very basic need, we are left to the whim of business. Single payer is inevitable, and the ACA is a giant step in that direction. We need must hold our officials to a higher standard, which will get us there faster. Well, 40,000 people a year is absolutely unacceptable. Vermont saw the writing on the wall. Well, the rest of us. So, you know, I don't know. They took advantage of the loophole there in Vermont. And hopefully the rest of the country
I hope that works for Vermont, and maybe they will work for the rest of us.
Maybe they will.
That would be great.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm not holding my breath on Obamacare, man. I'll tell you that. Ooh-ee-ee.
Well, I don't think anybody is, really.
Yeah. Isn't there something else there for union issues?
Yeah. Today has been designated Program for International Student Assessment Day by the U.S. Department of Education and the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the day that results of the 2012 math, reading, and science tests are released by the Program for International Student Assessment. PISA tests 15-year-old students every 3 years in more than 65 countries and issues reports of the data, which are then used to compare the education systems in the tested countries. Then journalists and politicians with little understanding of how statistics work and with strong ideological agendas will make proclamations about the data and propose policy solutions that are not only inaccurate but are often thinly disguised attacks on teachers, students, and parents. AFT has prepared a video and a brochure to address the real story of the piece of data and how policymakers should respond to the information learned from the test. AFT's Director of Field Programs in the Educational Issues Department, Rod Wheel, cautions against rushed judgments on the data. We want teachers, AFT leaders, policymakers, and citizens in general to go beyond the page in the report that has the rankings, he said. When they turn the page, they will quickly see that rankings and raw spending figures do not tell the whole story. Wheel's call for caution is expanded upon a report from the Economic Policy Institute, Richard Rothstein and Martin Carnoy, who shatter most of the methods used by pundits and politicians to explain the numbers. In actuality, international data are complex, and even a day or two's advanced look at a summary report would be insufficient to make an intelligent evaluation. It takes many months for careful scholars to analyze the data. Sometimes this analysis requires examination of more detailed data, including disaggregated scores by social class, gender, or race. These are eventually available on the testing organization's website, but often considerably after the initial public release of government summary report. Careful analysis of these detailed data can often undermine early assertions. In January, we published an analysis based on such detailed examination of the previous round of PISA data from assessments administered in 2009. Our analysis showed that conventional interpretation of these scores can be glib and misleading. Our chief conclusion was that an accurate interpretation of these scores cannot easily be reduced to the kinds of sound bites favored by many commentators and education policymakers. Patricia Kiefer, director of AFT's International Affairs Department, concurs with the EPI analysis and notes the major impact of poverty on school performance. That means that Americans should not only look at where our students rank against kids in the other most highly developed nations, but they also should consider how the day-to-day lives of those students vary from one country to another, Kiefer said. For example, among PISA's highest performing school systems, U.S. students have one of the highest poverty rates, a factor that has significant impact on academic performance. That's pathetic, isn't it?
Yeah,
highest poverty rates.
Yeah, well, they got to go into debt like crazy, and then they can't get
No, this is high school students.
Yeah.
Illinois Federation of Teachers President Dan Montgomery points out that the prescriptions based on this misinterpretation of the data are opposite of what we should be doing. The OECD doesn't prescribe austerity. It doesn't prescribe destroying public institutions, and they don't say government or union are dirty words. Public schools are there and need to remain there to provide quality education for every child, no matter where they are born, and the quality of that education must not be based on the value of the land where the student lives, so I agree with that. The Washington Post also takes a closer look at the countries that are more successful on PISA tests and finds a strong relationship between unionized teachers, higher spending, and common national standards that are properly implemented by professionals and high student performance. The data provided by close reading of the PISA reports and examinations of that and other data by the AFT, the OECD, and the Washington Post point to the same solutions used by countries like Finland and advocated by Montgomery. Truly, universal pre-kindergarten, fair taxation, where the wealthy pay higher rates and those at lower income rates pay less, adequate and equitable public school funding that doesn't over-rely on property taxes, and higher education funding mechanisms that allows for any Illinois high school graduate, this was where this was written, with good grades to attend and graduate from an Illinois public college or university without debt.
Remarkable.
Uh-huh.
That's what's going on, folks. You know, to get off that one, there's a couple of things I wanted to mention tonight. One is, there was a huge protest in Thailand, in the last couple of days. And the interesting thing is, in Thailand, riot cops yielded to peaceful protesters by removing barricades and their helmets in a shocking gesture of solidarity.
Oh, great. Good for them.
Have you ever seen anything like this? Thailand protesters enter government headquarters unopposed, okay? And bullets become black backslaps in Thailand as police stand down. And Thailand orders police to stand down as protesters bound to the house. Look at that. Look at that.
Wow.
They took off their helmets and they sat down and let them take over the government. Because they couldn't, because, you know, they,
They couldn't shoot their own people.
Not only could they shoot their own people, but their protest was actually 100% reasonable. Hundreds of demonstrators seeking to topple Thailand's prime minister enter government headquarters unopposed after police say they will now offer no resistance.
I would like to see our police do that.
You're lucky to see that deal. Okay, resistance to the demonstrators who have vowed to topple the prime minister. The Associated Free Press, a reporter at the scene, described the carnival atmosphere as no sign of security as tensions eased sharply in the capital after 2 days of unrest. The Thai government had earlier Tuesday ordered police confrontation confronting anti-government protesters in the capital, Bangkok, to stand down to avoid violence. The protesters said they want to seize government buildings, but the government doesn't want to see any fighting or confrontation, so we've ordered the police to back off, and government spokesman told the reporters. That's phenomenal. Earlier, a firebrand opposition leader vowed to escalate his campaign to topple Thailand's government and ordered his followers to storm Bangkok's police headquarters after they fought all day with riot police protecting heavily barricaded key buildings. Thai police said that they would not stand in the way of protesters battling to seize the building, a focal point of demonstrations aiming to topple the government of Prime Minister Sinawatra. Okay, Sinawatra. Today, we won't use tear gas. No confrontations. We will let them in if they want, said the chief of Bangkok's Metropolitan Police. Reuters witness said police were clearing barbed wire barricades for outsiders at the headquarters. And clashes between the two sides have left at least three people dead and more than 220 injured. Earlier, Prime Minister Shinakwa said he is willing to do anything it takes to end the violent protests, but made it clear she will not accept the opposition's demand to hand power to an unelected council. Yingluck was elected with an overwhelming majority in 2011, and many observers see the protest demands as unreasonable. Right? However, they're obviously the European Union said it was saddened by the it is quite a long.
I like the solidarity of the police
but it's
with the people.
Yeah.
I love that solidarity. That's fabulous.
They let them take over the buildings, actually.
Well, they don't want to kill their own people.
No, and one of the biggest tests right now that Obama is doing with his own military and the police force is, will you fire against American people? And if you can't do that, you don't get hired, okay? Or you don't get anywhere, all right? They want people who will kill Americans, all right? Americans.
Where did you see that?
Recently, a bunch of different articles. And it's quite frightening, actually.
I just wanted to mention the voters of SeaTac, a small suburban community near Seattle and Tacoma, Washington, I think I mentioned this last month, voted to provide workers for the town's larger airport-related businesses a minimum wage of $15 an hour, 63% higher than the state's current minimum wage of $9.19. And what that'll do is it'll improve and change the lives of the workers. Number one, it'll allow employees to live closer to their work and cut down on commute time. Number two, it will give employees with families more time with their loved ones. Maybe they won't have to work two jobs. Allow some employees who don't get much time off to actually have some weekends off. It would decrease working families' reliance on community food banks to provide for their families. Give part-time workers the opportunity to get more hours. Allow sick workers to stay home without the fear of losing their job. Protect airport travelers from illnesses by allowing sick workers to stay home. Profitable companies such as Alaska Airlines, though, are supporting a lawsuit to overturn this law and the will of the people and are seeking a recount on the measure. which passed by 77 votes. I think it's great that they are paying people that.
Skin color doesn't matter. Fraud, Muslim, bisexual. This is a picture of Obama here. So skin color doesn't matter. Fraud matters. Is he a Muslim, bisexual, socialist, eligibility, corruption, race beater, aspiring dictator, unconstitutional? Doesn't matter. I guess not. Not when it comes to Obama. He's everything. Oh, man. Okay. Well, you know, here we go. This is kind of an interesting article. Nonconformity and free thinking are considered mental illnesses.
Oh, really?
Yeah. By the Unbounded Spirit. That's the name of it.
Who are they considered mental illnesses by?
Well, it says, is nonconformity and free thinking a mental illness? According to newest edition of the DSM-IV.
That's the DSM-4.
Yeah. Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders.
It's like a psychiatrist's handbook.
Okay, Lila. We're ready for that. Okay?
Well, that's what it is.
Yeah, I know. It certainly is. Okay? The manual identifies a new mental illness called Oppositional Defiant Disorder, or ODD. Defined as an ongoing pattern of disobedient, hostile, and defiant behavior. Systems included questioning authority, negativity, defiance, argumentativeness, and being easily annoyed. Well, that's me.
Been in there for quite a long time, the oppositional defiant disorder.
The DSM-4 is the manual used by psychiatrists to diagnose mental illnesses, and with each new edition, there are scores of new mental illnesses. Are we becoming sicker? Is it getting harder to be mentally healthy? Authors of the DSM-4 say that it's because they're better able to identify these illnesses today, and critics charge that it's because they have too much time on their hands. The new mental illness identified by DSM-4 include arrogance, oh man, narcissism, above average creativity, cynicism, and antisocial behavior. In the past, they were called personality traits, but now they're diseases, and there are treatments available. Oh, I'm sure there are. More drugs. All of this is a symptom of over-diagnosing and over-medicating culture. In the last 50 years, the DSM-4 has gone from 130 to 357 mental illnesses. A majority of these illnesses afflict children. Although the manual is an important diagnostic tool for psychiatric industry, it also has been responsible for social changes. The rise in ADD, bipolar disorder, and depression in children have been largely because of the manual identifying certain behaviors as symptoms. And a Washington Post article observed that if Mozart were born today, he would be diagnosed with ADD and medicated into barren normality. And according to the DSM-4, the diagnosis guideline for identifying oppositional defiant disorder are for children, but adults can just as easily suffer from the disease, and this should give any free-thinking American reason for worry. The Soviet Union used new mental illnesses for political repression. People who didn't accept the beliefs of the Communist Party developed a new type of schizophrenia. They suffered from the delusion of believing communism was wrong, and they were isolated, forcefully medicated, and put through repressive therapy to bring them back to sanity. Now, capitalism is right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Americanism is right. Obamacare is right. And when the last edition of the DSM-4 was published, identify the symptoms of various mental illnesses. Yeah. There was a jump in the diagnosis of medication of children. Some states have laws that allow protective agencies to forcibly medicate, even make it a punishable crime to withhold medication. This paints a chilling picture for those of us who are nonconformists. And although the authors of the manual claim no ulterior motives, but simply better diagnostic practices, the labeling of free thinking and nonconformity as mental illnesses has a lot of potential for abuse, and it can easily become a weapon in the arsenal of a repressive state. Ooh, that is so true. That's where we are today, folks.
Mm.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. And let's see. What about, why don't you read something?
You check and see if
I'm going to call him now. Is there anything else that you can read?
Oh, sure.
We're going to get Larry Dorman on the phone here in just a second.
Well, here's another thing. I'll read this.
Okay.
A new campaign launched by the New York State AFL-CIO. What are they? Okay. Instead of always looking to corporations for answers, why not ask the people who make the economy run? A new campaign launched by the New York State AFL-CIO is urging government leaders in Albany to do just that, to shift their policy proposals in the direction of making New York work for hardworking New York citizens. In addition to launching a new website and online video, New York families to sign a 5-point pledge. Develop with families with standing jobs.
You bet. Hello.
Hey, Larry.
How are you?
Yeah.
How you doing, Larry?
Hi, Larry.
I'm doing well. How are you?
We're pretty good, thank you.
Yeah.
So
good. Good.
What's the state of the unions right here in Connecticut? State of the unions.
I think it's better in Connecticut than it is in a lot of other places. I'll say that much. You know, the big news has been Detroit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The fact that the judge ruled in favor of a bankruptcy and takeover that the citizens of Detroit actually never asked for. Their democracy was taken away by a right-wing Republican governor. And so they're going to take $19,000 a year pensions and cut them possibly, I'm hearing, as much as 70 or 80%.
Oh, my God.
You're kidding that much?
It could be that much. It's horrific. The judge's ruling allows the, now keep in mind that, you know, Detroit's bankruptcy was not caused by these pensioners, by these workers. And yet the governor of Detroit, Rick Snyder, a vaunted union hater, put through legislation, shepherded legislation to create this emergency oversight manager. So citizens of Detroit lost their democratic right to determine their own governmental decisions.
Didn't anybody go to the Supreme Court over this?
Well, we're going to, among others, we're going to AFSCME, our national union representing the workers in Detroit, will file an appeal, but I think Leo and Lila, you have to be cognizant of the fact that you have a Supreme Court that really has yet to do anything on behalf of the people or in the workers of America. You know, it's a corporatist court. So, you know, whether that has a chilling effect on appealing these kinds of things, I don't know. It's it's a dangerous blueprint. A lot of Detroit's woes have to do with deindustrialization.
Right.
You know, they gave $200 million of taxpayer money, I think, to the Detroit Red Wings toward building a new hockey stadium. I mean, they've made incredibly bad decisions over the years, but the people who are left there, who are still living in Detroit, you know, tend to work there as well, and it's absolutely destructive. So we'll see what happens. I just think that was a really horrendous development.
Now, according to the recent news that I heard, Bridgeport is on the verge of bankruptcy as well.
Is that true? Have you heard that?
Did you say Bridgeport?
Yeah. Bridgeport, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You do hear that, and I don't know how substantive or real that is. I'm not saying it's not real or it's not possible, Bridgeport's always thrown around there because they just have such a bad history. There was a state takeover of the city's finances back in the early 90s, so or late 80s, early 90s. And then, of course, you had the corruption under Joe Gannon when he was mayor. You know, Bridgeport's been a mess. So, and again, the problem with the Detroit oversight and the bankruptcy is that, you know, it's a template that other municipalities might try to follow, and it could be incredibly dangerous. But yes, I've heard that buzz. I've heard the buzz about Bridgeport.
Yeah. That's a really scary thought to follow down Detroit's road. I mean, besides an appeal of this decision, is there, while this decision is under appeal, they wouldn't be taking the money from the pension fund, would they? Kind of frozen while it's
I see what you're saying. Yeah, well, I'm assuming while there's an appeal, that would table any or delay any action. But, you know, again, I think that it's the appeal isn't likely to have a better outcome, if only because these judges are not inclined to rule in favor of workers.
So
but you know, I like to tell people that this is, you know, and this is kind of the stuff that, you know, you guys talk about. It, you know, as bad as it is to take away the pensions and to punish middle class, working class people, what I really want folks to be alarmed about is the loss of democracy. This is not what Detroit wanted. They never asked for an emergency oversight. They never asked for the rights of their city councilors and other elected officials to be usurped, to be taken over by this Republican governor. And that's really scary, is that they've appointed this gentleman, Kevin Orr, to oversee the dismantling of Detroit's assets. And, you know, they're talking about, they have a remarkable museum, the Detroit Museum of Art. They're talking about selling off the artworks within the museum. I mean, it's just crazy stuff.
It's a horrible thing, right, that I've read about and it and heard.
Has the union made have they been able to file any actions against the fact that this was not a democratically decided decision to have this overseer, or is there no recourse for that?
Yeah,
there isn't recourse because it was passed, you know, it was enacted legislatively, you know, it was enacted legally, and you know, we've seen on similar scales here in Connecticut, Waterbury, there was an oversight board that Roland put into place that gutted benefits for city employees in Waterbury. It happened in Bridgeport in the early 90s. You know, this is not new to, but this is on an incredibly larger and more frightening scale, because nowhere have these oversight boards or oversight individuals said that, you know, they're going to cut, slash, and burn the benefits of current and future retirees. That's what's really scary. You know, you worked all those years, paid into the system, and as I say, Detroit workers who retire are on a modest pension. So the average is about $19,000 for our members. Like, you know, like obviously there are teachers and firefighters and police officers who I'm sure have, you know, retired with higher benefits. But when I say $19,000, I'm talking about AFSCME workers, the guys who clean the streets and the parks and do the real hard work there.
It's not like when it's not like at 75 or 80 you can go out and get another job to supplement your income. You know,
suddenly you're cut in half, you know.
Toward the end of your life, to be treated so shabbily, it's criminal.
Yeah, it is criminal. You're spot on. That is the way, that's what it is. It's criminal. So we'll see. We're going to keep fighting. We're going to keep fighting and make sure that it doesn't happen elsewhere, or that it doesn't become a model. That's, as I say, it's a template, and it's a dangerous template.
I wish.
And this really is the win. This really is the, you know, and you guys do this on the blog. I mean, this really is another example of the right wing corporate powers dismantling communities and dismantling workers' rights. You know, this is much more about Bank of America and the financial institutions that had played a role in deepening Detroit's and probably profiting from Detroit's crisis than it is about the.
Just to change the tone a little bit, I came across a very kind of a strange article today called "Vermont Approved Single Payer Health Care." Okay.
Yes.
Have you seen that? Everybody in?
What do you think about that?
I mean, he was all toting the Obamacare, which is a nightmare, but at the same time, I guess it allows states to create single payer. Healthcare out of it. So
I say good for Vermont if it works. We've had this discussion on your show before. My problem with ACA, with the Affordable Care Act, I know it's better known as Obamacare, but my problem with ACA is that, you know, it was nibbling around the edges. And you need to have, what you need is you need to create Medicaid for all. One of the most.
You mentioned this strongly several years ago.
So I hope that it works, and I'm really applaud the state of Vermont for doing it. If Obama and the Democrats had pushed that, maybe we'd be wouldn't be talking about website glitches and. The other problems.
I don't know whether you were turned into the mainstream news at all this morning, but one of the things that they said, which was quite alarming to
me, I
always felt that Connecticut was an expensive state to live in, but they were talking that or saying that for a single person, in order to survive in Connecticut, they have to make $40,000 a year. Just to take care of yourself. And the problem is, in order to do that, there's 68 people applying for every job that can make that affordable for people to be able to accomplish that.
Right.
That we've had such an...
And most jobs are way under that. But the majority of jobs are between $25,000 and $30,000 for full-time employees. And
right.
It's absolutely staggering when you see that in Connecticut, just a single person alone needs to make over $40,000 a year, and a couple, needs to make a minimum of $70,000 a year, all right, to sustain three people and one child. It's like unbelievable. And when you see those jobs, there's like almost 100. Applicants for every one job available in this state. All right, they talked about a job gap that's unbelievable.
It's
frightening, Larry. And yet you see the decline in unions. You see the decline in everything.
Well, we've had so much pressure on our unions.
Almighty, Hey, Larry, I tell you, Lila is part of the union, but hand it to you, man, for sticking in there and trying like hell to.
You have to. I mean, you know, that's actually. If one of you could email me the link to that article, because I did miss that, so I'll put that in the clips that you guys get. But it just reinforces what we said. You know, there's got to be some mechanism, and I think unions are one of those mechanisms
to sustain
the middle class. I mean, you know, people. Don't have good jobs and they can't afford to buy things. What's going to happen to the stores on Main Street? What's going to happen to people's ability to have any mobility? And
you know as well as I do that it's a real domino effect. You know, people don't have.
It is, and it makes you kind of rethink too when we talk about the middle class and the working class. You know, you have to have a lot of money that study is just proving that, you know, you have to make what we think is quite a lot of money in order to survive. So, you know, pretty scary stuff.
You know, I work in a school, as you know, and some of the, you know, the we've had a, maybe five or six people retire at the end of last year. So, you know, there were new young teachers hired. And, you know, they have student loans, and they're teaching all day in a high-pressure environment because there's a lot required of teachers nowadays with the Common Core and new evaluation procedures, and they have to keep up with all the latest technology, and they have to have second jobs to pay
right.
pay off their loans.
Exactly.
It's
extraordinary. I know we talked about, you know, we all have these stories. You know, we're fighting the privatization of school cafeteria services in a couple of towns. One of them is Bristol, and a lot of the workers in Bristol, you know, have second and third jobs. And you know, one of our really strong leaders in the Bristol cafeteria workers union, she has two jobs, and she's been there serving food and preparing food for kids, which she loves doing, for 20 years, and she makes $14 an hour. And she just lost her second job, so if you know, they go to the private company, there's no guarantee she'll be employed, and if she is, there'd be a pay cut and, you know, higher, you know, a terrible health insurance plan. So really scary stuff.
Oh, that's terrible. Just terrible. But those are the stories that you
right.
hear, and you have a face that you put to that, and you know a person, and it's even that much more tragic to you when you see what it does to a person firsthand to be treated so shabbily.
Mm-hmm. You know,
mm-hmm.
I just got something today. It turns out that Obamacare's website doesn't accept payments.
No, they can't. They don't.
They don't accept payments.
You have to send it. You send in a check.
Yeah.
It's not. I knew that.
In other words, they can't. It can't facilitate an electronic payment.
Yeah.
Well, you know. I give them credit. I give them credit for trying. You know, here's the problem, right? They wanted private insurance companies to have a role in this thing, and then the companies, you know, basically, you know, show their thanks by flipping the middle bird. A lot of them wouldn't cover people, you know, in the exchanges because they're not going to make, you know, as many millions of dollars as they're accustomed to making. So, but this, you know, obviously the website has been a complete debacle.
I'm
not happy about that because people need, you know, people need insurance, and there are people. I mean, Connecticut, at least, thankfully, has been better performing since the passage in the enactment of ACA. I think there were about 13,000, the last time I saw it was about 13,000 Connecticut residents had signed up for health insurance under ACA. So that's, you know, but Connecticut kind of had a lot of the building blocks in place with the exchange and everything else. So I think we're a little bit more
Connecticut started quite early getting ready for that.
Yep.
Whereas a lot of other states didn't do anything. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. But I can't imagine what it's like to try to navigate that thing. I mean, the flip side is that it does demonstrate how many Americans need affordable health care and don't have it. So the fact that the system's overwhelmed, you certainly can fault the administration for not being prepared and ready for this, but it also tells you there's a real need out there, you know, throughout the main streets of this country. People need to get insurance. That's, you know, and I don't know if they pass it in Vermont, maybe we all have to move up there.
Yeah, or, you know, maybe Vermont can extend its borders.
Yeah, right. Maybe Vermont can annex Connecticut.
Yeah, maybe that would just be easier, you know.
Yeah.
Or maybe some way to...
But I love the creativity. I love the creative thinking because we need bold, you know, we need bold answers. We can't afford the nibbling around the edges. Just helps the corporatists.
Yeah, right now the 23 states declared that they won't work with Obamacare or the Obama. They're accepting the cancellations of insurance policies.
Right.
Yeah, I mean.
Right.
So what are people supposed to do?
What wonderful guys that are. They are. You know, they won't even help the people to keep what they got.
No, and part of the problem in defense of Obama and ACA, right, is that, you know, the red states that just don't want to play nice and want to keep having, you know, they're carrying out Boehner's and Cantor's and the Tea Party and Cruz, you know, they're carrying out that right-wing Republican mission. So that's certainly sabotaging some of the impact of what could be the positive impact of ACA by not participating.
Yeah, they don't. I heard something the other day. In Georgia, to qualify for Medicaid, you have to make less than $2,000 a year.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Qualify for Medicaid, okay?
Wow.
In Georgia, okay? But it's just frightening. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. And in Texas, I think you have to make zero, all right, in order to qualify for any kind of...
In order to qualify, yeah. So, I just want to provide... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, I'll go after you. Go ahead, Larry.
No, I just wanted to tell Leo that I want him to know that I'm not unfriending him.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I did that because I was so pissed off, you know. I
laughed when I saw that.
You know, it's funny the response I got. So many of my friends have said, Leo, we're there. And I got one guy who came, how many did you lose today, you know? And I said, but it's like I got so mad because I lost like almost 250 people just because I posted stuff on Obama and stuff on issues, you know, recent issues.
Mm.
And
I'm being serious. I mean, I support the president. I believe in a lot of what he's trying to do, but I would never, I wouldn't unfriend somebody because they're critical. I think that without questioning and criticism, we don't have much of a democratic society.
I think it's important to never support anybody blindly, whether it's a Democrat,
correct,
or Republican or independent. You have to evaluate yourself what you think is important, what somebody's doing. You know, it's important,
right,
to keep your brain. I mean, you just don't sign on and then just say, okay, let that guy take care of it. You got to stay on your toes. I think that's one of the problems that's happened with our system is that people haven't stayed on their toes, and a lot of things have slipped by us.
No, and it happens it's mainstream Republican Party has been kind of steamrolled by the Tea Party faction. Democrats are afraid to sometimes have dissent, and you got to have dissent. You got to have
absolutely, and you got to stand up even if it's not popular.
I support the president. I don't agree with a lot of what's going on, and
you have to say that.
And you say that, doesn't mean I like the Republicans. I don't, you know.
That's
I
right.
think they're worse, but, you know.
I wanted to ask you, there was a strike of Walmart workers that I read that was going to happen. Weren't they striking in Canton?
They were striking everywhere.
And
for Black Friday, what happened was, throughout the country, there were actions at Walmart's. Some were called strikes. Some were just pure demonstrations. So in the Avon Walmart, which is Avon Canton, Danbury and Groton, there were in Bristol, there were actions that I don't know that they had. The Walmart workers, I think, were too understandably afraid to participate, but in other cities and states, you know, Walmart workers have been very vocal and active and participating in these actions.
Have they been able to
thing.
Affect any change by their actions?
I think at this point it's a public awareness fight. I mean, the short answer would be no. Walmart isn't doing anything to improve it, how it treats their workers, but I think they're starting to feel heat that they really haven't felt in a long time about their employment practices, and coupled with their trade policies and their exorbitant corporate pay, it's not just an issue of the workers, it's the fact that they just destroy competition. You know, they level the small businessmen and the small businesses, and I think they're predatory in every way. So I think that if it, so again, the short answer would be no, and I think that if it's going to work and if it's going to happen, change, as you would be the first to admonish, is that the worker advocates have to link up with the community people and the small businesses. There has to be a broader alliance that's willing to take on Walmart, because they're putting people out of business. They engage in predatory practices. They treat their workers poorly. It's a whole bunch of things. And I think if we broaden the alliance, there's going to be better impact.
That whole protest that happened in D.C. Regarding the city demanded to approve Walmart, they had to pay people $11.50 or better.
The mayor overrided that.
Did he?
Yes.
He did. Huh?
Yep.
Yes, they unfortunately. But that's just the outcome was disappointing because the mayor vetoed it. The mayor caved into. And the council caved in, but there was a lot of support. It was for, don't give Walmart the breaks, without paying a living wage.
I think it was great that people are thinking along those lines, though.
I do too.
Money.
And this goes back to what you just talked about, that article about how expensive it is. If people aren't earning a decent wage and getting decent benefits, they can't live a middle-class existence. They can't participate in activities. They can't buy goods and services. we really cease to function. We break down as a society. If workers can't participate in the broader economy, then, might as well pack it up and let the rich guys build their castles and moats.
But you know what? If they're not enough of us to buy the goods that they want to sell, their castles are going to start to crumble.
Exactly. And again, I wish I were sitting here talking about victories, but a lot of it is just the first steps of raising awareness. I think I mentioned to you, in the town of Windsor, outside of Hartford, Amazon asked Windsor for, they're setting up a warehouse in Windsor. Yeah, and they wanted tax breaks upwards of 60-80% over the next few years. And a coalition of unions and other folks got Windsor councilmen to raise a living wage, they got a proposal out of the Windsor Town Council that would link any economic development aid to Amazon to local hiring, paying a living wage of $15 an hour, and agreeing to be neutral in the event of a union organizing drive. And the town council unfortunately voted 8-1 against that ordinance. But the fact is, it generated a lot of media attention, and but it shows you and this is a Democratic majority in Windsor, they caved into Amazon. There was no threat. Amazon would still get a good deal. Now they're going to get tax breaks, and you just talked about what's happening in the school systems. Well, you give these big, rich companies tax breaks, and that's less money that goes to the town coffers to fund public education, to fund the senior center, to fund parks and recreational activities. So, we pay a price for caving into these greed heads.
Oh, absolutely.
You wonder what
they're thinking. But people are raising it.
And what was it?
What
was their thinking? What was the municipal thinking?
They were fearful that fearful that they would send, that Amazon would go elsewhere. And I think that there was pressure. I'm guessing, too, that there was probably pressure from the governor's office that they didn't want to lose the possibility of creating 200-300 jobs in Windsor.
Wow.
So fear, unfortunately, a great motivating factor.
What good is it if it's 200-300 low-paying jobs where people can't even support themselves anyway?
Right.
No, companies like Walmart, and I'm sure, I don't know what Amazon's practices are, but, it's been shown that Walmart, pushes all of their workers onto public subsidy systems. So in the end, taxpayers do pay for the Walmarts, the billions that the corporations, the Walmart family's making. That's all coming courtesy of the U.S. taxpayer.
The CEO, I just read today, the CEO of Walmart fact, I thought I did. CEO of Walmart just said that they should raise all Social Security eligibility.
Yes.
They
70
do that.
Years old.
This
is the guy that's making over $20 billion a year. All right.
Exactly. He's part of the this group of corporate executives that call themselves Fix the Debt, and they profess to care about what's happening to Social Security, and their answer, of course, is to cut benefits and raise the retirement age. Well, meanwhile, they're making, you know, they got their pensions and they got theirs.
He's got a pure, $103 million retirement package, all right, as CEO of Walmart, all right? Yeah, and he wants everybody to be, you know, he wants to raise the Social Security eligibility to 70 years of age. I mean, what kind of heartless criminal is this?
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just amazing.
It's a good way to describe it. Yeah, most people can't stay, their bodies are breaking down, or they're, you know, especially if you're in, you know, I talked to our public works guys, and, you know, people engaged in really hard work. You know, your body isn't meant to necessarily be doing stuff like that at 70. And the fact is, you've paid into the system. You should have a right to retire at 65 and enjoy your retirement.
Yeah, I mean, and the fact that actuarially now, I think your life expectancy in this country is 72, all right? You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like, come on, who's giving
you? Yeah,
so
you get 2 years out of it, and then goodbye.
2 years and then you're dead. You know?
Well, they don't even want you to have sex, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're right to the end of our show. I can't believe it. We certainly had quite a go around in our conversation. And
I enjoyed it.
We missed you last month. Sorry.
And there was so much going on, but things have calmed down a little bit, which is good. So look forward to talking to you guys soon, and I hope you have a great holiday.
Well, we hope you do too, and I hope you get
thanks.
A little rest, because you're always out and about, and look forward to talking with you in the next year.
I'm following Leo on Facebook, so I know what's going on.
we keep trying to keep you updated there. Thanks for staying.
All right. Take care.
All right. Take care.
I love you, Larry.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Love
night.
You
good
too,
night.
Guys. See you. Bye-bye.
Larry,
Public Affairs Coordinator for AFSCME Union out of New Britain,
yeah.
Connecticut.
Yeah,
Council 4.
And I want to thank everybody. And join us tomorrow. Join me tomorrow night. We take you to a little trip around the moon. So good night, everyone.
And have a good night, folks.
Yep. Yeah. We'll